Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
I have a quick question for you that I would like us to solve by the end of the episode.
Okay, we have a mission. We have a goal.
Okay. I want an overarching arc for this. Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. Are we ready? I think the music would be more appropriate if you were like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Because, Brooke, is this secretly a Western?
Okay, Jordan's Letterboxd review.
Yes.
If you don't know, you posted something like, is this secretly a Western? Yes. And I was like, yes. What on earth does that mean?
Because James Mangold directed it. James Mangold directed Logan. And did you know that Logan is secretly a Western?
Wait, I'm sorry. That was why you said that this movie was secretly a Western?
Yeah.
Wait, I was fully on board with it is the thing until you were like, well, Logan.
Okay, wait.
Hold on.
This is like an internet.
I can't believe that.
This is an internet bit on Twitter where everyone's like, anything James Mangold directs, people are like, is this secretly a Western? This is a James Mangold film, so is it secretly a Western?
I feel like people were just saying that because they wanted to elevate Logan above, like, superhero status.
Yeah, but then it became a bit.
Did it?
Yes, it's a bit.
Were people like Ford v Ferrari?
People are still
Western?
Doing it now. Yeah, a podcast.
But
I listen to.
The thing is, I fully believe I'm fully on the is this movie a Western thing.
Okay.
So let's get into it.
Let's
justify it.
I'm with that.
There's a standoff, you know.
Exactly. There's two, you know, this hospital ain't big enough for the both of us.
Hey, wow. I took what I thought was just like a joke bit and became galaxy brain on this.
I would have never understood that if you hadn't explained it to me. I would have literally never made that connection.
Well, now you know. The more you know.
Thank you so much.
I'm sure everyone's so excited about this. Everyone listening is like, wow.
Brooke is thrilled.
Well, the thing is, you know I love a Western.
Exactly.
You know I love a Western.
Brooke came in here and she goes, I liked this movie a lot. And I was like, wow, how surprising. It's a sapphic lesbian movie. What, like, literally the intersection of your interests. Like, this is the least surprising thing.
So you're the one criteria?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, you ain't wrong. Hello. I'm Brooke Solomon.
Hello, Jordan Gustafson.
We love talking about movies. We love talking about being queer. We love talking about queer movies that are maybe also secretly Western. Mm-hmm. So here we are talking about them on mic today. You may not know unless you're familiar with James Mangold's deep filmography, but today we are talking about 1999's Girl Interrupted.
I'm sorry, what movie?
Thank you. We'll come back to that bit in a minute.
Grammar's important.
But we are joined by a very special guest today, writer Mimi Stringfield, an icon, to legend, a star.
Ooh, I love that introduction. An icon, a legend, and a star. Let's
all three.
Go.
Triple threat.
We should also mention for our, you know, in our audio medium, wearing a Winona Forever hat. So truly prepared for the occasion today.
I understood the assignment.
You did.
neither of us did. I'm not wearing anything Girl, Interrupted related.
Well, you know, I have a really wide dearth of Girl Interrupted merch that I could pull out.
Well, if you widen the net, Brooke is wearing a Josie and the Pussycats shirt.
Damn.
Which we could probably connect to Girl Interrupted. If you give me 40 seconds,
somehow
we're gonna Oracle of Bacon it. Hold on, wait.
Who was in Josie? That was it. With okay, here we
well,
go.
Well, no, see. There's no zero cast crossover.
Anyone in Heather's?
Yeah, ever? There's zero cast crossover.
I don't know about
Little
Heather's.
Reality
let's
Bites.
Angie. Let's
Black
see. Is
Swan,
there any
Stranger Things? Star
How about
Trek?
Some Angelina Jolie crossover? Were Angelina Jolie and like Parker Posey ever in a movie together?
Absolutely not.
Wait. Yeah, Parker Posey auditioned for this.
There we go.
Boom!
Wow.
Even
oh
simpler
God.
Than we thought.
Look at us. We
you
are
see?
So good.
Mm-hmm. This
wow.
is, yeah.
We
I mean,
put in the work. We're going to find out if this is a Western and we figured out if this is secretly
it's connected to
merch
Josie
related.
And the Pussycats.
This is secretly in the same universe as Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah.
She comes out to be like a writer and she does like a nice like profile of Josie, you know?
Hey.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what?
There's certainly...
There's a sequel there. There's a sequel there.
Girls Interrupted.
Hey, the girls
Please.
Being the Pussycats.
Lena Dunham is quaking.
Please.
Ooh. See, the thing is that, like, despite it's there are so many interesting things about this movie, because I feel like Girl Interrupted is sort of like, this one's for the depressed girlies, like, type.
I mean, that's all the Letterboxd reviews are just like, why is this my comfort blanket movie?
Mm-hmm. Tumblr exploded, yes. Blah blah blah, etc. etc. But like, it was designed to be so prestige-y.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's a nice combo. It sort of has that like really good 90s like New England vibe.
Exactly. There's like there's like a rhythm to it that's like, this has a nice hum to my brain. You know what I mean? Like, this feels good to watch. Don't know why.
Does it?
It does.
I like it. Yeah.
It does. It's very strange, but it does. It gives you like that. Your brain gets that like hot Nintendo 64 cartridge type.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Fuck.
It's so good.
It also does have, I think for me, if we're talking about like comfort, it'd just be the soundtrack, because the soundtrack is so goddamn good.
Mm-hmm. So good.
When you're alone.
So good.
Yeah.
Like when the whole downtown singing sequence like broke me. That was hands down like the best part of the movie for me, at least.
Yeah.
See, it's so good.
It's so soft and like,
it's sweet.
Comforting. And sweet, yeah. Exactly. It's like tender.
Yes. Yeah. This movie is not sweet all the time, but it has such sweet moments that I think like you can't help but look at it fondly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, a lot of people are talking how it's like the female woman version of like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And if you
want to
like
someone on Letterboxd
gender
said...
it, it's like men are like crazy and so like disgusting.
Yeah.
And women are more tender.
And women are just in there watching TV.
Right.
Singing to each other,
falling in love with each other.
Yeah, they're finding their inner, you know, they're making wicker butterflies and putting them on the wall, like
finding sapphic toxic relationships to be in.
Exactly. I know. I have to expose you slightly, Jordan, because off mic, Jordan was just like, he was like, could be gayer, and I was like, what do you mean? He was like, they could have ended up together, and I was like, this.
I don't think they should have ended up together. What I mean, could be gayer though, is that it should have been gayer. Like they should have fucked. Like, or
unsimulated,
like,
or on like, screen.
Wait a minute. Winona couldn't even find, she couldn't even find like a window to fuck.
True.
Jared
well,
Lowe.
Look, they hit the
but
road
when...
together. They were in that,
in the van, in right
that
there
house,
in the van.
Right? Mm-hmm. Or I mean, like a better makeout sesh, some better kissing. I don't know. I just think like it was a very quick kiss. And all I'm saying is that it could have been a little more gay.
Interesting.
Well, to be fair, I do have to be Team Jordan on this, and I'll tell you why. Have you ever had a memory where you're like, oh, that explosion in that movie was so big, or like that scene was so long, and then you watch it and it's like the smallest, most insignificant thing?
Yes.
So I told my best friend, I was like, I'm doing this podcast about Girl Interrupted. I haven't watched it in so long because it emotionally destroys me. I was like, so I have to go back and watch it. And we were talking about, you know, the queer themes of the movie or whatever. And I was like, is it secretly not queer enough? And she was like, what do you mean? They make out. They kiss, and it is explosive, and it is the craziest kiss. And I was like, I don't remember that, but I'm going to go on this journey with you. And I turned the movie on last night, and it's literally, you blink and you miss it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like leaning over to fix her shirt. It's barely a kiss.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Like the van hits a bump in the road, and it's
like, oh,
you know,
my lips on your lips.
Landed on yours. My bad.
I mean, like, if I was Winona, though, I would take advantage of that bump in the road in a second. Are you kidding
me? Oh, I would have, like, sprawled myself across the, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Listen, there's a lot of good target area with Angelina Jolie's lips. Oof. You got a pretty good chance of hitting them.
Oh god.
So
beautiful.
I have to say, I sympathize with your friend though, because I remember the same thing, being like, no, like this like rewrote my brain when I saw it, and then I watched it again and I was like, oh, they it, like it's pretty
tame.
It's barely lip contact.
Yeah.
It's like corner of the mouth type vibe, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yep.
I'm actually pretty shocked about this, because this is my first time watching it.
Wait, what? You've really? Never
what?
Seen it before?
So,
this has never happened in the history
of
the podcast.
This is very shocking for me. I don't know why.
Wow, this is really interesting, Jordan. Is it because you hate women? Why would you wait so long to watch Girl Interrupted?
It's actually true. I famously despise women. No. not true.
Oh my
Fake news.
It is very fake. But I feel like, as we were talking about, like, implanted memories or like remembering things, I had thought that I had either A, seen this movie, or I remember like seeing clips from this movie a lot on like young Angelina Jolie on like top tens or whatever.
Yeah.
On being like Angelina Jolie's like best performances, or like, do you got like early YouTube where it was like, do you remember when Angelina Jolie made out in this movie? And like there would be like clips of, like, I remember the movie but never actually like saw it through. So I remembered so many like scenes, but I never actually like sat down and fully
experienced,
watched it. Yes. Which was definitely like, I, all those scenes in my brain also similar were like not as sexy, because I thought that this movie was going to be like the most horned up like thing in the world.
You thought this movie was Wild Thing.
Yes.
You thought it was going to be like, yes, they were in the pool inexplicably at this New England mental hospital, yep, like pulling off their bikinis and making out while like slow sax played in the background.
Yes. 100%. And that gratefully was not the case, but was very shocking.
But what a movie that would be.
Oh, I would see it. I actually think that really speaks to kind of like early internet, and also like so frequently how like female driven movies like get,
it boils down to like how hot is this,
to how hot is this, weird reputation, sure, where it's like, ooh, a little something something's going on between Winona Ryder and Angelina Jolie, let's blow this completely out of proportion, and like it ends up having nothing to do with like the actual thematics of the movie.
Absolutely not,
even though this is a love story, albeit a toxic
or is it
one.
A western
westerns can be
why
love
can't
stories
it be both?
That's yeah true.
Porque no los dos.
Okay, I will say the thing that's great about westerns is that you can plop other genres on top of the western,
and it's still a western.
Yeah, it's not.
We have to stand.
It's not specifically the genre that makes a western. It's the vibe.
It's so the vibe.
That's
exactly
why I think that the tag for this is true.
I hate you.
You know what? You're really convincing me here. We're getting really close.
I'm pulling shit out of my ass, and you're like, you know what?
I'm
pretty good.
I'm fully on this journey with you. I'm
Thank
not
you
kidding.
So much. This is our 310 to Yuma. Like, we started off, you know, like we're going on this
talk
quest
about a good
together. I know. I'm keeping it mangled centric here.
Interesting career.
Really on
his. Now?
Well, first, I want to hear, since you told your first watch story, I want to hear other first watch stories. So, Mimi, how did you first become acquainted with this film?
So, here's the thing. I don't remember. But it's just always I have been no there. Memory. It's just always existed in the back of my consciousness. Like, I guess being, you know, growing up in like the late 90s or whatever, and like being a big fan of Angelina and Winona, it's kind of one of those things that of course you watch it. So I have no memory of like my first watch, but I will say, like I said earlier, I hadn't watched it in, I'm gonna say, 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Just because like it's hard emotionally, like for a woman, and like mental illness and all that kind of good stuff. It is hard.
Yep.
And it hits differently now at 28 than it did when I was a teenager, because then it's just like, oh, she's just like me. Where's God? Like, you know what I mean? But now it's like, oh, wait.
Yeah.
Ow. You know what I mean? Like high impact kind of thing.
Yes.
So even I would say my first watch last night in my room with my like vibey aesthetic lights on, trying to, you know, get into the mood of the film, it was difficult.
Yeah.
It was hard.
Yeah. I knew that this was about people, you know, with a lot of like mental illnesses, but I was like really not ready, I think, for it. Like, this was a very difficult watch across like the board. I was like feeling like some personal shit with this. It was like I like paused it halfway and was like sort of like, I'm gonna like take a little reprieve, and then like came back to it.
I need some water.
It's
like
a tough movie,
because it's like,
it is,
yeah, it's just like very upset. And I think that's sort of like the thing with like any movie sort of like this, where it like really confronts like mental illness and like depression and suicidal like ideation and thoughts like so head on, could just be 100%. So heavy to watch, and like obviously like can be executed very well, but then you think about like 13 Reasons Why or whatever when you watch it, and you're just like Jesus, this is just like a fucking disaster.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. And especially with this one, because it, I mean, they throw you right in.
Oh yeah.
Because it starts with, you know, I mean, no spoilers to anybody who hasn't seen this movie from 1999. Come on. But like, it starts with, you know, Angelina, like, lying in Winona's arms, and they're, like, she's monologuing about being a girl, comma, interrupted, or whatever. And then they throw you right into her stomach being pumped, and, like, it's a lot. If you go into this, I think, blind, like, completely, like you did, Jordan, first watch, no context really whatsoever, you're just like, what's happening to me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was going to be, like, female hysteria, because it's like set in the 60s, so I thought it was just be like, these women are crazy, and it was like not that, which I was very glad it wasn't. And like, I didn't know it was based on a memoir, so there was like the super personal tie to it, and like obviously Mangold's like a very good writer, so like it has so much I think towards the end of this, but like the cultural conversation about this movie I think has become so different than the actual maybe text itself, or at least like the conversations around this movie sort of overpower the actual story that's like hitting the core of the movie.
Yeah, I think
agreed. I think there are layers to it, because I don't know if either of you have read the book, but the book is a lot more like, there's not really a narrative. It's not really chronological. It's not really a story as much as it's like, these are observations that I made while I was hospitalized. So I think that the movie is really far divorced from the book, which then kind of creates this, it's almost like real life and then the book, and then the movie is like this third universe that has no real relation to the real Susanna Kaysen. But then they walk this line of like, we're telling a real story, but we have to fictionalize it. And so it's kind of a funny tightrope that they had to walk, and I know that the script went through a lot of work, because Winona initially wanted to buy the rights to the book. Columbia beat her to it. And then it was a fight of like, I want to be attached to this, but the script has to be right. So they were in constant rewrites, constantly trying to figure it out, until they managed to like get Mangold on and nail down what we know to be the movie.
Yeah, which makes total sense, because it's like, he does, I really like the way that he directs, and I feel like he has like an appropriately light touch when it comes to heavy subjects. He's like kind of like a journeyman director, except he doesn't direct that many movies, so when one comes out, you're like, it's kind of like just good solid old-fashioned
like
filmmaking.
He's like a like a John Ford adjacent sort of vibe, where it's like all dads kind of love him. He has a wicked weird career, but like all of his movies are like very, very solid, if not like good, at least the ones that I've seen of him. And I like haven't finished his filmography, but like there's none where I'm like, this is outright bad that I've seen. But like even Night and Day,
it's
like I have a like, maybe that's my toxic trait, but like I have a fun time with Night and Day. So
it's fun.
You have Tom Cruise and Cameron Diaz. How is it not going to be fun?
Okay, now please don't wake up my inner like Tom Cruise stan. I'm trying to keep that dormant, but
mine's
like,
not dormant. I'm sorry, honey.
Like I'll just leave the room, because the two of you together on Tom Cruise, it's gonna be crazy.
No, please, that's fully that's like a 6-hour episode. That's like a deep dive into why Tom Cruise is the greatest living movie star.
Absolutely,
I'm getting emotional. Like I can't. But I think the thing is like, with Mangold, they're good, but they're so specific.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's never just like a movie that's being made for the sake of being a movie.
Yes.
It's like he's very intentional about like, I am making this, and there's a reason that I'm making this. You know what I mean? And I think that's kind of I don't want to say it's like a lost art, but it's kind of a lost art.
It is.
Even a movie like Girl Interrupted, like just watching it, like we were talking about the rhythm of it and like the vibe of it, that would not happen today. It wouldn't exist today.
This is a 10-episode miniseries.
Yeah.
Like
easy.
Just in the pantheon of like sort of like a little bit genre adjacent, like just the tiniest bit like offbeat films that just literally don't happen.
This is like Made. This would be made on Netflix or something.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Exactly. So this is like somebody's Emmy bait. You know what I mean? This is slapped on a streaming service. We all watch it in one day. We never talk about it again, but it sweeps the Emmys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Oh,
I mean, it's
crazy.
Like that's, I think that is a testament though to like his directing. Like I mean, like obviously we'll get into Winona and Angelina, who are like two queens. I love them both so much. But like, I think if you just look at his filmography, like he is so good at pulling out such great performances out of people. His movies have 14 Oscar noms total with 4 wins. And like, he had Winona win for this. He had Angie. Oh my God.
Which rest in peace, Winona will get into that.
Yes. Exactly. But then like, with Walk the Line, okay, of course, like Joaquin and Reese, like he like knows how to direct actors within the confines of the genre. And so much he plays within genres. So it's so fun to sort of see his career through that lens, as we were talking about. Like Kate and Leopold was like a great rom-com. And you don't expect the guy who did like the Wolverine or Logan to have done that, yeah. But they're both like equally fun films. And then obviously like with Walk the Line, it's like the biopic movie. Like I feel like if you're talking about like biopic, like music biopics, like that's the one that everyone talks about. Absolutely. Yeah.
My parents love that movie. Like it's like a classic. Oh yeah. Oh my God, of course.
Like, a good old mom and dad movie.
Absolutely. Yep.
But I mean like I wouldn't even expect the guy who made Ford v Ferrari to make this movie. Right. And like that was the year that Ford v Ferrari came out. I was like, this is the movie I'm recommending to everyone. This is the movie that I'm dragging everyone to go see because I know that like nobody will be mad at me for recommending it, but it's still a really good movie. And like, I think that that is like an art in and of itself, is to make something that's not particularly edgy but is really entertaining but is also a very like good piece of cinema. And he has less chances than a juggernaut like Spielberg or whoever to make like that kind of movie. And yeah, I really like him. He's good.
I love him.
He's like a solid guy. Exactly.
Solid dude.
Exactly. Just like a good, solid, you know what I mean? And I feel like we don't really have that anymore. We don't really have directors who are just like, this guy just makes a good movie that I want to watch on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you have to emotionally prepare, or like you have to do homework, or, you know, you have to take 5 aspirin before you watch it. Like, there's never just a solid movie that I'm going to watch in the middle of the week. That genre doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah, because it's all on TV. Yeah.
And his writing is amazing, too. Like, I have read that Logan script so many times just because it's, like,
Academy Award nominated script to you, good sir.
It's just so fun to read, and I would be curious to, like, I would love to see what his script for this is and, like, how it's sort of laid out, because I'm sure it would be, like, a blast to read because it is super engaging the way that he writes. So I don't know. We have to stan. And I am excited for his Buster Keaton biopic because, like, Buster Keaton's my guy. And I'm very interested to sort of see how he approaches it. Like, is it going to be young Buster, old Buster, sad Buster? I don't know.
All of the above. It'll be nice to see him go back to that well, too, after Indiana Jones 5.
Right. And I was going to say, did he write the script for Walk the Line?
He definitely did, I think.
Probably. I will tell you in 3...
Absolutely.
With a co-writer.
Love to see it. I know this Girl Interrupted was a co-write too. I think it was two co-writers.
Usually co-writes with someone.
And also that probably, you know, like you said, was sort of like the fraught script development. That probably means there's a draft.
Yes.
And then there's another draft. And then there's the Mangold draft.
Exactly.
It all gets mixed together.
What was the movie with the insane writing?
It was the Elvis biopic.
Yes, yes.
Oh, God.
Where it's written by Baz and X and... By and it's just so like, oh my here, God,
I'm gonna
litigation
lay it out
is fun
because it's this is so nerdy, but like, so the upcoming Elvis biopic, it's like there are 3 screenplay credits. 2 of them are Baz Luhrmann with a co-writer, and then one of them is just some random dude.
Yes.
So it's Baz Luhrmann and co-writer number 1, Baz Luhrmann and co-writer number 2, and someone else.
So
it's
it was so definitely
which like at some... what point at what point is it just not that script anymore? You know what I mean? Like, at what point?
That last one, when it's just by him, was 100% probably the first script, like a blacklist script or whatever, and like that then got rewritten, and then that got rewritten. So like that first guy's script probably like doesn't really exist anymore.
But that's, I mean, what's so crazy about screenplay credits specifically is that the WGA has to determine that you rewrote 51% of the material to be awarded an actual credit. And it's like not just, oh, I changed around like the action so that it reads in my style now. Like you have to make 51 or more percent changes to like plot or character. It is
crazy.
I think about it all the time because I have nothing better to do. I don't know what to tell you. But
Funny thing is, like, whose job is it to sit down and be like, okay, what percentage of these yes. pages from this script are in this script to determine that this is 51%. You know what I mean?
That's like, the percentage I want to know.
Yeah.
If we tomorrow were like drafting and let's say I wrote 17 pages of Elizabeth Moss monologuing, which shout out to Elizabeth Moss, by
the
way.
That makeup.
I had no memory of her
Same.
Being Polly.
Same.
None.
Wild.
And I was like, what do you mean? She's incredible in this, by the way.
You mean this is prestige TV, Elizabeth Moss?
Like, this is the same Elizabeth Moss who was on Mad Men?
Right? What? It's wild.
Love her.
It's crazy.
She's good. Yeah.
She's another one. She's solid. She just turns in solid work every time. And she does the weirdest stuff. And I love that. I love that she's not afraid to just do the most deranged. Her
she
smell
her freak
is
flag
one of
fly.
The most...
Love that
fully.
Movie.
Good movie.
I love her smell. That is a solid, solid movie. And she's so good in it. She's and I feel good. Like she's one of our, like, best living, hot take, best living character actresses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And she doesn't get, we don't really, like, give her, you know, we don't give her her flowers, but I love her. Elizabeth Moss, if you're listening to this, if
Come
you happen
pod.
To be listening to me standing you in the middle of this Girl Interrupted episode, please call me.
Oh, she
I just
should.
Want to tell you how good you are.
She is.
She's great.
And
no, I love
I
her.
Love that, like, she really does. She doesn't really do normal roles anymore,
no.
which is fine because we have plenty of people to do that. And so now I feel
exactly.
like there was like a 2-3 year period where she was attaching herself to stuff really frequently. And it was like, what crazy role is Elizabeth Moss going to do next? But every time I feel like she finds something cool and interesting to do with it. I also love her smile. I think Invisible Man is
she
so good.
She whips so hard in it.
I am a
Invisible
Mad
Man is
fan.
Crazy. I love that movie.
Even
I watched
like Shirley.
It so many times. Shirley was so so here's the thing. I did not enjoy Shirley as a movie.
But
it was a very hard watch.
It's
for
a
me.
Vibe. Yeah.
It's
but her performance is so good.
Yes.
And when you can pull that out, when you can like I can be like, I hated this movie, but that performance was incredible. That's like a solid You're a solid actor. You know what I mean?
She knows what she's about. And it's, she is weird, but she is weird in a naturalistic way where you're like, I get that this is like a capital P performance, but it's not taking me out of it. Like, she's always
exactly
on
like,
same
I'm
wavelength.
Following you. Yeah. I'm always willing to go where she's going. I'm on that journey with her.
Yeah. It's great. I love it. I mean, I think that what we said earlier about how this movie gets divorced from kind of like what it is actually about due to like the cultural conversation is interesting in like a bunch of different contexts. Interesting, I think, in the prestige slant of James Mangold, like
totally,
we were just talking about, from the sort of like hysterical women slash like women with mental issues subgenre, which is like usually very fraught with a lot of problems. Mm. And then the fact that this is like ostensibly a teen girl movie. Sort
yes.
of.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Like the one to one of this and Heathers is like a very simple line to draw if you want.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is like when you look at, when you contextualize this in both Angie and Winona's filmographies, it makes so much sense because Winona's coming off of like Boys, Reality Bites, even How to Make an American Quilt. Like there's a direct line from all of those to this.
Yeah.
And then with Angie, it's coming off of Gia, it's coming off of Foxfire, which is first of all one-to-one direct lines. Foxfire is an incredible movie.
Yeah, I've never seen
I
it.
Have only
oh.
seen and heard no I've not seen I've only heard and like seen like
no it is it,
you're
it's so
standing
good.
Okay
I'm standing Foxfire. It has everything. It has Angelina Jolie. It has Jenny Lewis. It has a girl gang. What
yes.
I'm saying is you have to watch Foxfire.
Yes.
Wow.
Oh, I think
you're
do.
You're setting a fire
in
to us
to oh.
my heart to watch it. I listen, anything that has a girl gang, I'm in, I'm ready. But yes, I think that like, I mean, particularly Winona Ryder, I feel like she is that girl during this period.
Yes.
Like, yeah, like this is her ooh. Wheelhouse. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Nobody else could have played Susanna but her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love like her, I love the way that her acting style fits into this performance.
Yes.
The sort of like explosive bathtub scene is probably like my least favorite scene because it feels like that sort of Oscar-y, like, okay, here we go. And yeah, I like it so much better when she just like doesn't know what to do with herself.
I agree. Yes.
And is sort of like bitter and like a little vindictive, but mm-hmm. in a quiet way.
She's so good at that. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that also, you know, that very like explosive scene, I feel like for maybe a lot of audience members and also to like the benefit of just like this as a script needs to show you that like she is a pretty bad person because she's doing it subtly. But I think that that scene is more in there for the benefit of the audience as opposed to the benefit of the story.
Yeah.
Agreed. Well, I also think that like they, and again, this is the difference between the movie and the book, is like you get these moments with Susanna in the book where, okay, so the thing, there's a throwaway thing in Girl Interrupted about her thinking that the bones in her hand have disappeared.
Yeah.
In the movie, and he's like, well, if you had no hand, bones in your hand, how did you pick up the aspirin?
Right.
But in the book, that's painted more as, like, Susanna having a very intense episode in the hospital where she's, like, biting her hand and she's like, I don't have any bones, and they have to sedate her. It's a whole thing, blah, blah, blah. So I feel like that scene with Whoopi, which... watching it during History Month was a lot.
Yeah.
I was like, girl, you were too good at that. She slipped a little too easily into being racist. You know what I mean?
It's really quick. Like, it's you're not expecting it, and then it's just
at
there.
At all.
Yeah.
Comes so fast.
She's like, and even watching it last night and, like, knowing that it was happening, knowing what was coming, knowing verbatim what she was going to say. She's like, you're night school for black Negro welfare mothers. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Hold on. Hold the fuck on.
A train coming into the station. It's insane. Because you like know, you're like, this is uh-oh. And she just like fucking goes.
She rams right into it.
Yeah.
And then she keeps going.
She keeps going.
She doesn't just say it and then back off of it. She keeps fucking going. You're like, wait a minute.
Enough.
Yep.
I did not sign up for that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of, because I do think that like this movie is made with like 90s sensibility, even though it's like set in the 60s. And that's one of those scenes where you're like,
I forgot that this is set
in the 60s,
but it's like, it's not like you're not upset by it, but it's like, God, like
you didn't
got the
need to
point.
Do
you don't have to do all of that. Like, mm-hmm. Let's chill. Let's enjoy the bath. Let's not do this.
It's a very
big bathtub. Yeah, it's a huge bathtub. Let's enjoy this.
We'd kill for one of those things. And then it's never discussed again.
No.
Like, the next interaction that she and Whoopi Goldberg have, she's like, it's okay. Don't worry about it.
Like, yeah, they're like hugging.
Right, you're like,
they're hugging. Which, by the way, Whoopi Goldberg, shout out to her. Incredible
I was just
going to
say.
Terrible nurse in this.
Not doing
terrible
her job.
Nurse
bad bedside manner.
She's like, you're not crazy, you're just lazy and you're making yourself crazy. It's like
wait, is this how mental health works?
Yeah
Is that your, I mean, not to, you know, Susanna was wrong in this, but is that your official diagnosis? Are you a doctor? Because that doesn't sound very textbook to me.
No.
Yeah, sort of like how I don't know. For me personally, watching this movie, I was like, the mental health discussion doesn't really bother me because it's like you know what you're getting into when you're watching this movie. Like, it is narrative driven. It is like prestige-y. It's not really meant to be an after school special, but it does have some very 60s and some very interesting thoughts, not just on like the more explosive aspects like shock therapy and stuff like that, but for being like, if you just like focus, you can get better. Like, it's all good, you know. You just have to channel your emotions
sunshine,
properly
good.
Into painting,
just write in your
and
journaling.
It's fine.
Yeah, where she's literally just like, if you just like write your thoughts, I think you'll like be able to heal yourself. And you're like,
and it works.
Huh.
That's the thing.
Okay.
That's the thing. And then we get a solid 3 minute, you know, montage of her journaling, and then she goes home.
And then she's
good. It works.
Yep.
She's fine.
Magic.
Yeah, it's wild. And I think that, like, based on the book, it is, a lot of it is sort of smoothed out to give Winona Ryder's character right. that sort of, like, protagonist bend, where it's like, well, we have to feel like we're with her. We have to feel like we get her.
Yeah.
And that, like, yeah. we want to see her get out, and that we can track her mental health journey. We watched this movie in my high school psychology class, which is a extremely weird choice in hindsight, because if there was a movie I was going to show about, like, psychology to a bunch of high schoolers, it would not be this one.
Absolutely not this.
It's like,
wow. And I think why? Crazy.
Do you remember how I was like, we watched The Matrix in our theology class?
Because
it was
like, wait, what?
We watched The Matrix in my high school theology class. I went to Catholic school because it's like this whole big, like, there's definitely like a read of it where it's like this whole biblical, like, Jesus metaphor. Like, he dies and then he comes back from the dead, and like,
can you put that on this movie?
It's like, he's the chosen one.
It's not a reach, but like, but you know what, like,
yeah, I think my teacher was like, this is an excuse to watch The Matrix. I can honestly,
who was your teacher, a cinephile?
I don't know. I could do like an entire podcast on the movies that we watched in school that like had absolutely nothing to do with
those
anything.
Are the best kinds of movies. I remember
easily we watched my high school we watched Juno.
Ooh.
Repeatedly, not for the themes of like teen.
I was just gonna say, kind of a good movie for teens.
No, not for any educational purposes. We just watched it all the fucking time.
You're like, hamburger phone time.
It was so bad. It was so bad. I'll never forget. Because here's the thing. So I went to a performing arts high school.
Oh, love that.
And we had like,
oh no.
Don't. Here's the thing. I've never been forcibly institutionalized like Susanna Kaysen. But this is the closest relatable experience that I have. So,
that absolutely tracks. And it, I honestly think that's really valid.
I mean, that's a full episode. So the way our schedules were, it was like college scheduling. So we would have like 2 hours of drama class in the morning, and then like a 90-minute math class, and then lunch, and then like 2 90-minute classes in the afternoon. So we would watch Juno in drama class. And then sometimes we would go to phys ed at the end of the day, and it was raining, so we had to stay inside and watch Juno again.
Was this like a one VHS, like, underfunding type situation?
I wish I had a memory of why this was constantly happening. It was so bad that it got to the point where, like, I had memorized all of the dialogue in the movie.
Oh, no.
Because we were watching it so often, and I would be, like, reciting it under my breath and not realizing I would do it. And people would be like, I can fucking hear your S's. Stop doing it. I'm like, I can't. I can't, because you've Pavlov's dogged me with this movie to the point where, like, I can't watch it and not say the dialogue. You know, like, I have to.
You have orange Tic Tacs. You are Diablo Cody.
Yeah. I actually like that movie, too.
I love that. That movie rules.
Like, but it's not a movie that you really want to watch over and over and over and over again. Because it does have that, the very Diablo Cody, like, every line is quotable until you know all of them. And then you're like, I hate this.
Right.
No, it's, oh, I hate it. I haven't seen it. I probably have not seen it since I graduated high school.
I mean, residual trauma.
Exactly. I have like a genuine fear of it. I think I own it on DVD, and I think that I've like purposely buried it somewhere that I don't have to see it, because I don't know where it is. I don't want to know where it is. Like,
yeah,
I respect that choice.
I'll write a treasure hunt for it when I die. Somebody can have it. I don't care. Just keep it away from me.
We're gonna find it.
We are. Yeah,
we're gonna.
That's
it's a piece
third
of history
arc to
right
this.
There.
Yes.
Oh my god. But yeah, I think that, like, honestly, this is, again, it's like, it really does speak to the sort of weird genre blending / like audience blending of this movie, though, where it's like, it's appropriate to show high schoolers because it is kind of about high schoolers.
Yeah.
And it's appropriate for school because it's like about something important. And it's also like an actual movie, you know, like there are no boobs in it or whatever you want to, even though it's rated R, like whatever the sort of like vague prestige-y stuff gets put on this movie.
Well, I think it's, it exists at the perfect, like, as you were saying, that intersection. I would love to also think about, like, I wish there was a list, I'm sure there is, of like high school shown movies, because this fits that type that we're talking about. And I can't think of like others, like 100%, but there are
like
so...
Remember the Titans,
right?
Like
exactly,
the inspirational exactly. Story of like, yes. Oh, for sure, yes.
Yeah,
yeah, those movies,
mm-hmm. Where mm-hmm. It's like a little dated, where you've like it's kind of been out for a long time, yeah. So you're like, okay,
and it has the vibes of your teacher's favorite movie. Like, yes. We watched Gangs of New York in AP US history class.
Well, that
I was like,
100% your teacher's favorite movie.
I was like, you want to watch this movie because yes. You
no
like
way.
This movie, yeah,
exactly.
I was,
but then that was like with me, but my weird English teacher, he's like, my favorite movie is The Tree of Life, and here we go. And everyone in the class except me was like, this is the worst thing ever made, and I'm
because
like,
you're special.
This is a fucking amazing
because
movie.
You're a cinephile.
Like, my brain is like unlocked. Walking as the
not,
dinosaurs are like
not
Earth.
Notable Tree of Life stand.
Oh, notable.
Oh, very notable.
No.
Yeah. I have the Tree of Life tatted on my arms and arms.
You can, yeah, hey, you can do
just
it.
Tree, kill a tree. Wait, knuckle tattoos.
Tree life
of on the thumbs.
I'm gonna find.
Oh, that's so good.
We're gonna get a visual of that.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna tweet it. Oh,
I'll write
my
it
God.
On my hands in a Sharpie after.
Perfect. Yeah.
Commitment
right.
To
the commitment bit.
To the bit. Yeah.
Well, we if always
there's
commit
one thing
to the
Jordan
bit.
Loves
yes.
Is committing to the bit.
Yes, but
the Elizabeth Moss of comedy.
Yes. Oh.
I'm also a Scientologist.
Ooh, bring it back.
Queen of Scientology. Truly.
We don't talk
Miss
about
Scientology.
That.
I know. We like don't. You
I know that's
yeah.
That's whispers.
Her and yeah.
Elizabeth, if you're listening,
we didn't say that.
Cover your ears.
We love you. It will. Hey, her and notable James Mangold muse Tom Cruise, the royalty yep. Of Scientology.
Yep. That's true.
Little Miss and Mr. Scientology 2022, if you will.
So disappointing. We don't need to talk about it. To bring us back to Whoopi, though, I
yes.
Did have. I just wanted to say, she is so good in
so
general
good.
As an actress. Like, obviously, and she's so funny. But I really love this career period in Whoopi, where she's like already so famous and popular, and has like kind of done her like jumping jack flashes and shticks, where she like pops up and stuff just for like kind of brief, really good supporting. Like performances where it's like she's not gonna get nommed for it, you know, she's just sort of there to like lend some credibility and like name recognition, but she's always like really good at delivering the goods. Like she's not really a great like doctors were saying or whatever, but like she has an air of like prestige and authority to her that I really love, that like makes this performance like really stand out and like feels like so authentic within the confines of the movie.
Yeah, and this is when she was agreed. Churning it out. She'd be in like 3, 4, or 5 films a year.
Yeah,
just rolling up
Whoopi fever,
delivering and then leaving
literally.
Yeah.
Which now it's like, okay, I understand why you know, you just show up to The View, you say your little opinions, and you go home. Like, if I had been doing a run in the 90s like she was doing,
oh god, yeah,
you would never hear from me. I would be at home in bed every morning with one leg elevated, not for pain, just to have it
just
elevated.
For luxury.
Yep.
Just for fun. Just like, I bought 6 pillows just for the right leg specifically. You would never fucking hear from me.
Absolutely. No,
she
never.
Is unbothered. She like knows what's up. I don't want anybody in my house is a quote that I think about frequently.
Incredible. Get that tattooed right on my forehead.
Oh my god. Are
I
we
don't
gonna,
want,
do you want to go get tats after?
Oh, absolutely. No, it's that I'm getting. I don't want anybody in my house. And then I'm getting the Kim Cattrall. I don't ever want to be in a situation
I don't wanna,
for even an hour.
Ever want to be in a situation.
Incredible.
For even an hour.
So good.
Perfect.
That's biblical. That she really... biblical.
It's right. Like, she's correct. There's nothing 100%. Else to say.
Did she do that?
She did that. She really did that.
To
that.
Tie us on the actress train, just while
yes.
We're chatting actresses and careers, one on just Winona while we're here.
Winona.
It's so fucking upsetting because, like, I think this ties to this movie in general, sort of the cultural consciousness around it, how dirty we did her.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is like right at the precipice, right around that time. It's like, you have the Age of Innocence, you know, this, and it's like that incident, and it's like fucking gone. And it's so
yep.
Fucked up how we treated her because, like, yeah, stealing's bad or whatever, but like to like blacklist in the lengths in which like we as a society like canceled her is like so fucked up.
Well, it's so funny, even coming off of this movie where it's like, you know, when Susanna reads out her diagnosis from the DSM, and it's like, well, I don't remember if they touch on this in the movie, but like, it was thought that stealing was a, you know, a a symptom or a tell of being borderline. And it's like, maybe she was going through something. Maybe it was mental illness. I don't think we ever have really gotten an answer to that. And we're not necessarily entitled to one. But it is crazy to watch this movie and then immediately watch this woman be like thrown away, canceled for doing something a little silly that might have just been mental illness, or she might have just been having a bad day. Who fucking cares that she stole? Like,
literally,
it's truly ridiculous to look back on. Luckily, we're all absolved of this because we were like seven at the time.
That's true.
But exactly. I know, it wasn't me.
I was on the front fucking lines canceling her.
I get to be innocent. But yeah, I just, it's, I don't know. She's so great. And like, remember that she was a teen star from like the 80s when she was actually a teenager. Like, this is 99. She's not that young in this. So it's like, she has been in the spotlight for so long, and it was so crazy that everyone was just kind of like, you know what, fuck that. Fuck, like, absolutely.
Like, it's
not
the, literally the year after the year that she gets like her star on the Walk of Fame.
Yeah,
so it's like
so stupid, but we love her now,
of course.
And
of course
she, like, I'm so happy that she now like is being offered starring roles, and she's like, I don't want that. Like, she has the choice again, and like,
exactly,
I love her late stage stuff. Like, I think she's great in Stranger Things.
Oh, yes.
She's great. Killed it in Black Swan.
I was going to say, I loved her in Black Swan. Yeah, I thought Black Swan was an incredible choice for her.
Line delivery of the movie for me.
Yeah.
Easily. It's her and Barbara Hershey for me. Steal the movie.
So good.
Yeah. She has such like a good sardonic like side to her that obviously she was at the height of her power in like the Heathers, Beetlejuice.
Right. Like this too.
Run. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
this too. For sure.
Like, she's the edgy girl. She's like your goth girlfriend. She's everything. She runs like that sort of like alt side of the internet.
You know,
especially the early internet.
Like early to like whatever, 2009, whatever, 2012 internet, like when the filter and the hair or whatever, like, you know, if Winona was a teenager then, she would have been thriving.
Yeah, I mean, she was still,
for sure,
like,
her,
she was
like,
an icon. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you look back at that era and you look back at like Tumblr and stuff, the Beetlejuice gifts and you know, like
Heathers,
the Heather stuff
everywhere.
Yes. And then they would always, it always took me out. This too, Girl Interrupted was another one, but they would make like GIFs or like take screenshots, but they would make them black and white to make it more deep.
Gotta
and I was like,
it.
You know what? I respect that. I respect the hell out of that.
Yes.
It's a screenshot of her being like, is that your dying nonsense, Dr. Valerie? But it's in black and white, so you know that it's emotional and deep.
And deep.
Exactly.
Hot Topic, like, owes her so much royalties.
They really do. And it's nice to see her sort of like be able to re-embrace that. I mean, like, a good little movie, Destination Wedding. Yeah. I'm
an
not
incredible movie.
Great film. I'm not saying it's like awards worthy or whatever. Actually, you know what? I am saying it's awards worthy. It's a good
Thank
movie.
You.
But it's like,
period.
she can use like her sort of like, I mean, her and Keanu were like such a good combo in that. Yeah. I just love the ability that Winona now has to like use her past in a good way, and also like is able to get these big meaty roles. I would love to see her branch out and like be in a bunch of like more indies and stuff like that.
I would love her just to do like what she does with Age of Innocence or something like that again. Like, she fit in, like, you wouldn't think that she would into a period piece because she had
the Crucible.
Like,
yeah.
I feel like she
even,
you know,
like even Dracula.
Yeah, exactly.
Little Women.
Yes. Yeah. No, but like, I love like she feels modern enough where like, can she blend into a period piece? That might be tricky, but she can. She just, you had to have like, she has to be like the edgy one or like the too young. You know, like there's a way past her where it works.
And she, I think what's also important about her is she has discernment where she knows like what roles are good for, you know what I mean? It's not to say that she doesn't have an incredible ability, because she does, but she knows like where the pocket is. She knows what roles are good for her and what are not. And she really employs that vibe that she has really well. Because even when, wasn't she in Mr. Deeds? Was that her?
Oh God, was it a movie I don't remember?
I think that's her. Yeah. And even in that, it's like, she's good. She's good.
Yeah, you're
that's
right.
Her.
Wow.
Yeah.
A movie I have blacked out from my mind.
It takes place in New Hampshire. We have to
I will
stand.
Say, This movie is set in Massachusetts, and it does not feel like it is Massachusetts.
Well, to be fair, it's only like two locations.
Because they shot in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Really?
They did.
Well, because
they said in the beginning, they were like, said Boston and stuff. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, is this set in Massachusetts? And like the Massachusetts in me was like, ooh. And like then I like it wasn't. I was like watching more. I'm like, this isn't a Massachusetts landscape. I know that.
They're mostly, to be fair, they're mostly inside the whole
thing. Yeah, I was gonna say, the only location I remember is like inside the mansions. I'm like, that could be fucking anywhere.
Yeah. Very true. There's a very specific blend to like, Boston, New England wealth. Yes. Like it's very specific. Yeah, 100%. But I think you can let this one slide.
It's getting a pass.
Okay. Well, that's
nice. Well,
here's
the thing. I also feel like when it's a Boston movie, they are very like making sure you know it's Boston.
Oh yeah.
You
baby.
Know the town is in Boston. Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like
Jordan can attest.
No.
That's my juice.
Oh God.
So last actress that I would like to talk about is Angelina, because we were talking about career choices and stuff like that. And I think that Angelina has one of the most fascinating careers just in general as like,
oh, for sure,
an actress, because ostensibly it's so bizarre. Like obviously for this movie, you know, gets the dub, but like she never really, I think, pops as big as the cultural conversation around her is. Mm-hmm. Like,
agreed.
She leads movies, and, like, you have her, your Lara Crofts or whatever, and you have these movies like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Alexander Wanted or whatever. But, like...
Hackers.
Salt.
Hackers. Oh, maybe put a little pepper with that salt. who is Salt? But, like, she... Like, nothing necessarily pops like... You know, like a Winona, like has so many like huge blockbusters and like has these like franchises or like gigantic like populist cinema, and nothing that Angelina Jolie does never fills the void. Like it kind of gets there, but it's never like, I think, of the same scale in terms of greatness.
Wait. But like Winona Ryder is not a blockbuster actress.
No. I'm not saying she's, that's what the conversation I'm having is like Winona, like Beetlejuice, like all these movies we've been talking about.
You're saying they stick in the
cultural. They're successful and they stick in the cultural conversation. Yes.
Yeah.
But Angelina hasn't done stuff as much like that, like 2-3 movies maybe max that have like actually like stuck around, but it's more of like the idea of Angelina as like a star versus like Angelina the actress.
Yes,
exactly.
But she's good and she's a great actress, but like it's an interesting career to look at.
Well, because she
is, especially now with her, because she's like, I mean, she's been semi-retired kind of for a while.
Right.
She hasn't really, you know, she's got kids, she's been slowing down, she's been doing more humanitarian stuff. So it is kind of interesting, especially with her doing Eternals, to see her kind of emerge back into the cultural conversation. And for people, I mean, you know, young cinephiles like growing up now don't really have the cultural context for her that we have.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're just like, oh, this incredible blonde lady in this superhero movie. And it's like, no, bitch, she was wearing Billy Bob Thornton's blood around her neck in 2001.
Yes.
You know what
I mean? She was
like,
doing it.
That is, she was doing the work is what I'm saying.
Yes. Yes.
She like is such a great example of someone who like is a movie star rather than
a star.
Actress.
Yeah.
Yeah, even though, yes, like I love her, I think she's a very good actress.
Yeah.
But like it's just impossible to divorce like what she was doing off screen and like how big of like a style icon, a beauty icon, like a celebrity icon she was, as opposed to like her actual performances.
Exactly.
And like I have sort of loved her later career, mm-hmm. like elegance that she has moved into. Mm. I think, you know, Maleficent was a great choice.
I was not expecting that.
Okay, but it was a great choice for her.
Yeah,
like
the jawbone.
I'm not saying that it's a good movie.
No, I get you. I get you.
I
no, yeah.
have.
Okay.
Mixed
I
negative
see,
opinions
though.
On that movie, but like,
but it made sense
that
as a
role,
yes,
yes
yeah.
fits her, I think,
yeah.
like very well.
And I mean, even like, I like not to talk about her and Brad, but like, By the Sea,
no,
I think is like a phenomenal performance by her.
Agreed.
And like, I wish she was doing more of that. And we've talked about this, but her firefighter, what is it called again?
Oh, Those Who Wish Me Dead.
Those Who Wish Me Dead.
I didn't watch it.
What was the vibe?
It's fine.
It's
not
fine.
Bad.
I
it's
like
fine.
Her a lot in it, but the movie doesn't service her character necessarily great, as you famously talked about. What she's wearing is hilarious. What Taylor
this
Sheridan
girl
thinks women wear.
Wears lingerie.
Yes.
Under her fire. firefighter outfit. Yeah. And it was...
What?
It totally took me out of the movie.
It's unbelievable.
Fucking ridiculous.
Wait, first of all, not to tangent, but like, what is the reveal that leads to us knowing?
I think...
Is it like a Poison Ivy gorilla suit striptease? Like, what are we...
Girl, I wish.
Iconic.
I feel like it's
she's stripping to the fire. Stop fire.
No, Beowulf vibes. So sexy. Like,
yes. I feel like it's sort of like a good example of like the modern way in which like women are still like objectified on screen, but it's not as bad as it used to be. But there's definitely still an element of like, okay,
it's a little
like
leering. Enough.
Where it's I think that it's either like her clothes are fire scorched and she has to change, or she's like using her shirt to like stop someone's bleeding or something.
Something like that.
She goes from work clothes to work clothes and is in his really lacy bra underneath. I mean, she looks great, like good for her, but I don't directors are so afraid to put women in sports bras.
Yes.
Just can't
normalize the sports bra. Literally,
sports bras are important.
They're incredible. I'm wearing one right now. Normalize the sports bra.
You would never catch me wearing underwire in the fucking wilderness, like for my job. It's insane. Anyway, but
point of the matter, she's good in the movie, and it's like I would love to see her come back to the screen in those sorts of performances.
She's coming back.
I agree. Yeah. I think we're having like a Jolie Assance, but
Eternals totally shafts her. It's so unfortunate.
Yes.
She's fucking nothing.
She should be the lead in that movie.
Yeah, she's so good. Like, but I love her in this movie. I think this is obviously like a very big, very showy, very Oscar-y performance,
but she's so good in it.
She knows what's up.
She really punches it.
Can we talk about her line where she's, "I'm playing the villain, babe, just like you want"?
Yeah.
Ooh,
playing the villain.
Let's go.
Oh, so good. It's so good. That whole sequence is so good. Like her reading out of the journal and like echoing in the tunnel. Ah, she's so good. Yeah. Even the sequence with Brittany Murphy, an angel, God
rest in peace.
Soul.
Yeah.
I miss her every day. Yeah. I miss her all the time. If Brittany Murphy were still here, so many
She'd
people
be thriving.
Would not have careers. Like, yeah.
The girls would be worried. Yes.
And they should be. She would have been Black Widow. Hot take, Brittany Murphy would have been Black Widow.
Probably.
I would have totally been down for that. She's wonderful. She's great in this movie.
Brittany Murphy says, "Scar, no." Sorry. Sorry.
Please.
You done?
I'm done.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Oh, like she's really good, and I would have loved to see like what she looked like in late stage career.
She's really
type
good in
thing.
This movie.
She's so good, but yes, that scene is like very.
It's incredible.
Yeah,
and it's the thing is like it takes you feel like Angelina is putting so much into it. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can really feel like the depth of the performance and that she's like digging this out of a very dark and scary kind of place, but you don't feel overwhelmed by it. It's kind of like, and I think that's kind of the duality of the character, is that it's like she's so scary but it's so enticing.
Yes.
And Susanna is like falling in love with this very scary, very deranged person.
Yes.
I think that plays into
Angelina.
And that's
what makes the movie.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, it plays into the Angelina, I think, appeal as well. Is like Angelina as a star is sort of like intimidating, especially like in this era, like people were, you're like, she's like so beautiful that it's like scary, and like the way that she like holds herself and presents was so much about like, it's as you're saying, the blood around her neck, it was like very much like intended to like kind of scare you and like intimidate you, and this movie like perfectly plays into like what makes Jolie like an intimidating star.
Yes.
Which is 100%. Why I think it also like is one of her like better performances for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's so tall. She has
so tall.
The best cheekbones ever given to a person ever.
Really.
And
incredible.
Nonsense.
You just never buy that like this woman would not be aware of like how she is presenting, which is I think very smart in like the roles where like she works best, is that like you're never gonna cast her as someone who is unaware of that,
right?
Like,
and... where Salt like loves Salt as a bit, I think it's actually not a horrible movie, but like Salt, she's supposed to like blend into the crowd or whatever, and you're like, that's Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, like that would never happen. Right. That would never happen.
Right.
Yeah, she's just so
even like even looking at like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and you're supposed to buy her as just like a housewife who, you know, brings wine to party. No, come on. That scene where she's there at the dinner party and like her skirt rides up and you see her fishnets, I'm like, that would be happening 12 times a fucking day. Angelina Jolie, like, No, I don't believe she just came down the street with a plate of cookies. Come on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But like, that is why you want her as like the attractive villain. And I think it's so much better when it is like from this entirely female perspective, character wise, because it's like, I don't know. I think there's something, maybe I'm projecting a little bit. I think there's something really hot and fascinating about a girl who is your peer who like could be really mean to you, but has a specific interest in you. Yes. And like you feel special because they're interested in you, even if you don't really know what they want, because like they're in a higher position than you. Like they're cooler. They like, there's something unknowable about them and you don't really get why they're paying attention to you. And I think that that's like very magnetic. And she uses that really well in this movie. But at the same time, like she and Susanna have something really genuine. Like I love that scene when Winona Ryder, rightfully so, breaks up with Jared Leto and is like, I want to get out of here. I just don't want to get out of here with you. And then it cuts to Lisa, Angie, watching her in the window and like smiling and being like, oh my God, she's staying. And it's like,
well, the funny thing about that sequence is that it starts with Lisa trying to protect them while they're trying to have sex in Susanna's room.
And failing.
So it's kind of this, failing miserably. But it's just kind of this funny arc of like, okay, I'm going to do you the solid and let you like have sex with your boyfriend. But then when the boyfriend leaves and it's like, oh, you're staying. Ooh, you like me. Ooh, you know what I mean? Like, it's such a funny, and I feel like that scene is really so telling of, like, what the entire movie really is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's so good.
It's like you failed having sex with your boyfriend, but you know who you won't fail with is me.
Is me. Well, it's
which
the
is the scene this girl right here. I think should have been in there, because this movie needed to be gayer.
I think that, like, there's a lot in how cruel they are to each other and how much like they do hate each other at times, like the final Brittany Murphy scene is a great example when Lisa is just like ripping into her and Susanna's like, shut the fuck up, like stop, and is not really necessarily protective of Daisy. She's more
angry. She's just like, the delivery of that is crazy, because like it could have been so many different things. It could have been like a whining or like a whatever, like a desperate,
like,
no,
oh my
she's
God,
like
stop,
shut the fuck with a capital F and a capital K up. It's crazy.
I love the way Winona Ryder says fuck. It's she so just good. Has a really good the delivery way, of fuck.
God, the way she,
she does.
Yeah,
it's like a, there's like a,
it's the way she says her,
like,
K.
It's the mommy, the K, exactly. It's like, it's like not sharp,
it's,
but it's
the K,
not soft,
because
it's
she does
perfect.
It with cock as well.
Yeah.
In
Black Swan. it's the best
the
line.
No, you're right.
You fuck sucked his cock, sucked or however the fuck she does
right.
It is so good.
It's good.
You're right.
But I thought of the exact same thing when I was watching this, because the way she like
shut
spits
the
word
fuck up
is good. Uh-huh. It's really good. She's great.
She's so good.
But it's like they are very like brutal to each other.
Oh my God, they're everyone. Yeah, they're so mean.
But they're so tender with each other too. Yeah. And like they're
exactly.
I think just like it's a really good sort of like textbook, we're friends but we're more than that, but like there's this layer of like toxicity
totally
to it that I think comes from the fact that they're women. Like that is like something that I feel like has been in the cultural conversation a lot recently, a la Yellow Jackets, if you will, that like women are specifically like very brutal with each other, but it's in a way that you don't see coming. And it's much
like cerebral.
Yeah,
you know,
like,
not to like put our gender on blast, but like we tend to behave in very specific deranged ways. You know what I mean? And so when there's two of us and we do that to each other, it's like, of course, this is what it looks like.
Yes, but it's like it's much more complicated than the sort of like stereotypical mean girl type trope, where it's like young women will psychologically terrorize.
It's vindictive and not just like bullying,
and not just. Bullying. Like it is psychological warfare, but oftentimes that comes with like a very attractive edge as well, which is like a great example of this relationship.
Right.
Like,
so very psychosexual.
Yeah. Oh,
very that.
You
very
know
that.
I love the word psychosexual and any theme that is even vaguely psychosexual.
And
I'm
it's
obsessed
very
with
that.
Especially if it's a psychosexual Western.
Ooh.
Oh God.
Ooh. No, I agree. And I think also like, if we're going to tie like a real life thing into it, I think Jolie's bisexuality also like lends credence to this, because like I think that there is a draw, like I think by casting Like, look, actors can act gay. That's not a thing. But I think if you cast a gay person to play a role that, like, has elements of it, I think you're going to get a little more juice from it. And I think there's a believability with Jolie when you see her sort of lusting after Winona Ryder. There's, like, a believability there. It feels more potent than if you just had someone, like, pretending to be like, ooh, I love you, versus Jolie, where you're like, there's, like, a raw, like, attraction that you can see that she has for her while they're trapped in this, like, one location together.
Yeah.
Well, because, I mean, even a lot of what we think of as, like, well, I mean, obviously subtext is not in the script, but a lot of what we think of as the context for this relationship, this thing between them, isn't in the script. It's a lot of, like, the looks and, like, the way they are physically with each other, you know what I mean? So it's not stuff that was written. It was stuff that they brought to the characters. It was choices that they made on screen. And so I really think that, like you said, Angelina's sexuality had something to do with that, because obviously, you know, if you had cast, I don't know, just any old, like, straight white lady, she would have just been like, okay, so, like, they're mean to each other, and then that, you know, that's it.
Yes.
But I think that they brought so much to the characters and made, like, a very deliberate choice of what the relationship was, and I think that's the important distinction. It wasn't just, you know, the studio or the director was like, we want a lesbian movie, we want a, you know, two women, they're in the loony bin but they're lusty
but they're lovers, like, yeah.
No, like, they brought very intentional, you know, and, like, an awareness and a weight to this relationship that didn't exactly exist on the page.
Yes. So. And I think that, like, being someone who, like, looks like Angelina Jolie and who had that incredible sort of, like, spotlight on her, like, you understand how people react to you.
Yes.
Like, you understand very clearly the power that you have, and usually, like, even without the need to say, like, with just this gender or that gender, like, she just is so iconic in that way that, like, I think that that is another, like, layer to, like, the very smart casting. And she understands, like, how to seduce women, for lack of a better phrase.
Yes.
It's so good. And she's one of the, what is it, five queer Oscar nominees from the past?
Probably, yeah. One of the few.
20 to 30 years. Yeah. It's something crazy like
something
that.
Something terrible, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
On the seducing thing, there's a quote from her that I just wrote that I need to just say and get out there. In an interview in 2000, an interviewer told Jolie that she was an actress most straight women wanted to have sex with, and her response was that she was the actress most likely to actually have sex with them, which I think is such
icon.
A fucking flex, where she's just like,
icon.
Yeah, like, I'll fucking do it. Let's go.
Also, shout out to that interviewer being like, a lot of straight women, not me, but, you know,
not me,
a lot of
my
straight
friend.
Women,
my
friend,
a yes. lot of really heterosexual ladies might like to hop in bed with you, despite the fact that they're, you know,
hypothetically
really heterosexual.
Yeah.
Like, if I wasn't straight.
Ooh, yeah.
Right. Well, but I also think that's kind of like the beauty of the movie, because even, you know, me growing up as glad ally of the year straight girl from New Jersey, watching this, you learn so much about, like, just like what raw sexuality is, like just sexual power, you know what I mean? Like, you learn so much from Angelina in general, but I think specifically from this movie, of like what it's like to be so deranged but so sexy that people don't care. You know what I mean? Or like to be so nasty to people but still have that kind of magnetism,
the power,
like,
over
this
them
movie came out. Let me think. So I was like 6 when this movie came out, so I probably would have been like 10-12 the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
And like that, those developmental years of figuring out, like, okay, what is attraction and what is, you know, sexuality and what is blah blah blah, that is a crazy thing to have.
Very much so.
Access to in those developmental years is like, there are people who are evil, but they're so hot that it doesn't matter.
What?
That's crazy.
Yeah, that
being attractive can, like, rewrite other people's brain chemistry towards
literally.
You.
Even with her hair, which is shocking.
Oh, yeah. We have to talk.
Let's get into that. Let's get into that very specific.
That blonde? Oh,
the bangs.
Boy.
I just want to know why.
And the thing is, I'm like, I mean, I know they were never going to show us this on screen because it's part of the mystery, but like, did Lisa cut those herself? Like, what's the story?
Sure, yeah.
Has to. They're sticking out in 17 different directions.
They're messy.
It's so funny because in the book, Susanna just describes her as yellow. Like, she's like, she's malnourished. She doesn't sleep, blah, blah, blah. She's like, she's yellow all the time and she's got yellow hair. And it's like, okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then in the end, spoiler alert, Lisa gets out and has a kid. And Susanna runs. Yeah. She like has a kid and she's a single mom and she lives in the suburbs. And Susanna runs into her on the subway and she describes her son. Susanna calls him a toast colored boy. Ew. And I'm like, toast colored. What are we saying?
Yeah, what is that?
What are you trying to say?
Susanna,
it's 1993. You can
let's
say
chat.
If he is.
Yeah, let's have a talk.
Yeah. Oh my god.
But it's like exactly. But the way she talks about Lisa as just this like jaundiced, deranged lady, none of that says Angelina Jolie.
None
of that.
She's
and
so glam.
Exactly. Even when you first see Lisa in the movie, she comes in, she's so pale because she's been outside, I guess, and she's wearing that all white, the white jeans with the white tank top.
Yeah.
And she's all one color, but then this insane
yellow
hair. She looks sickly, but you're still so fascinated by her.
Yeah. 100%.
And that's crazy.
This was also peak, like, 90s, kind of, like, insanely thin, heroin chic. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, so this was, like,
it
extremely
plays into
fashionable.
It.
Yeah. This is, like, it's everything from, like, Winona's haircut to, like, I feel like the way that people talk to the outfits. It's 60s, but it's 90s at the same
100%.
Time. So much so that I'll be like, right, this is the 60s. Right, like, JFK being shot is, like, on the TV because it's the 60s.
Yeah. Which is, like, that,
or, like, even the draft, when they show the draft numbers on the screen, and you're
right.
It's, you know.
Yeah, it's shocking because it lulls you in to thinking it's like a 90s sort of like era thing. And even the music, you could have it played as like they're playing these old sort of classic hits just to sort of sedate people and like keep everybody at bay and like add to like the overall like vibe of it versus it actually being like the music that they would play or like the popular music at the time.
It's very like 60s aspirational styled music.
Yes.
I mean, I love Downtown Certified Bop, but yeah, it's like it's definitely very selected from that era. I think like
the end of the world drop is like so good.
I was gonna say it's so good.
It's
so
on the
perfect.
Nose, but I'm like, I love it. I'm eating it up. Absolutely.
Yeah,
literally. And then specifically when they show you like the record ending and starting over. Like,
again.
Yeah, give me that shit.
Yep.
I'm eating it up.
It's
that's
so
great.
Good.
I didn't come to this movie for subtlety.
Oh,
like,
this
movie
at all.
You came for
no,
sledgehammers.
Exactly. Ham fisted, punch it through the screen, like grab me by the throat. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Do you think that Marvel, I hate to bring this up, but like with the Eternals, are we going to do End of the World because Angelina Jolie?
100%.
Were they like super happy about it?
100%. I would pay money to see the email chain of like
someone figuring it out.
We've made a decision on the song for the trailer. It's End of the World. Oh, that's genius. Oh my god. I would pay money to read it.
We need another
Sony Leaks part two.
Yep. I think that the parts that work like best in sort of that period piece vibe are like, for many reasons, the scenes outside of the hospital where they're like they're with like
the
60s 70s hippies, like we've got the van, we've got like the most late 60s party to ever exist where there's just an ungodly amount of weed and people in crochet tops.
Let's go, dude.
And CW Supernatural star
Misha
Collins.
I sat up. I was in bed. I sat directly up in bed last night. I took 5 pictures of my screen because I was like trying to get it. And I sent it to my friend. I was like, is that Misha Collins?
Baby Misha.
What?
I like, wait, we've mentioned Misha Collins before Clea DuVall. I would just like to have that.
Oh, wow.
Stated.
I'm embarrassed for myself.
We were saving the best for last. Come on.
Were we?
Surprisingly high queer actor quotient.
That's what I was going to bring up if like we didn't. Like,
yeah.
Clea DuVall. Like,
Clea DuVall,
we have
Whoopi.
To stand. Yes. Yeah.
Angie.
Yeah.
Angie.
Hey,
we'd love to see it. Yes. But sorry, Misha
queer
Collins
icon Natasha Lyonne auditioned for this. I found out when I was like researching.
She would have killed it, I think, honestly.
She would have. Yeah. I really want to know what role she auditioned for, but it was an anniversary interview for But I'm a Cheerleader for Criterion, and her and Clea were talking about like their friendship and how they came to know each other. And I think they said that they had talked on the phone because they had the same agent, but their audition for this was the first time they met in person.
That's so sweet.
Natasha was talking around it because she was like, we auditioned for the same movie, blah, 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 whatever. And Clea was like, by the way, the movie was Girl Interrupted.
That rules.
I mean, this casting lineup was crazy. Like, you had the more, like, I would say mainstream girls like Brittany Murphy and like Reese Witherspoon. And then you had like the lineup of like alt indie girls like Rose McGowan, Christina
Parker
Ricci,
Posey.
Parker Posey.
Ooh, Christina Ricci would have
ate. Lily Sobieski.
Mm-hmm. God. And like Mangold was talking to people like Courtney Love and Alanis Morissette for the Lisa role.
Crazy.
Yeah.
They should have just brought them all in.
Yeah.
Courtney Love, incredible actress. I'm going to say it. I love her.
Well, take.
And I'm committed to it.
I love
people
it.
People want you to forget that, didn't she like win a Golden Globe for
for sure.
The Larry Flint movie? I'm pretty sure that she did.
A movie that doesn't exist.
I can probably find out filmography.
The People versus Larry Flint.
Yeah. Yeah. That movie doesn't exist at all.
I don't know. Let's see. Now we need to know. It's too late.
Here we go.
We have to know.
The
People versus Larry Flint. Here we go. Let's see. Oh, hello, Woody Harrelson. How are you?
And his Jerry curl.
Let's see. Golden Globes.
Incredible hair in that movie.
She was nominated. She did not win.
See?
But she was nominated.
You see? People want you to forget that that was a good performance.
They were against Larry Flint.
Critics Association nominated her. Like, she was out here.
Wow.
Yeah.
She was out here. It was a good performance.
Satellite Awards.
I remember absolutely nothing from that movie.
I've never seen this film.
I'm like,
never
yes.
seen it.
My God, the role she ate. Let's go.
Queen icon. No, it's a good, it's a solid movie, you know, like in that same vibe of like the 90s kind of that
yeah
rhythm,
yeah yeah,
you know, it's a good,
like a thank you for smoking one. Energy sort of,
yeah,
it kind of has the energy of like, see, I don't even think there's anything that I can compare it to. It's not as deranged as Natural Born Killers, but it leans in that direction of just,
I think,
know.
You get that with Woody.
You know what it reminds me of, which is crazy? California. With a K, with Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
I don't
know what it kind of
what you're talking about.
It's a film.
I've never even heard of this movie. Oh,
it's
my God.
It's so good. It's
California
so good. It's got
K.
Brad Pitt.
I've never seen
it's got David Duchovny.
93.
Juliette Lewis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean anything with Juliette
Lewis.
That movie
has everything.
Ooh, okay.
Brad
Hello.
Pitt looking good.
This poster, wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Come on and join California Hive.
Nice
demented.
And nice and like just sort of grimy, steamy.
Yeah, this looks disgusting.
Yeah,
90s.
It is. Yeah. And I love every second of it.
Yeah.
That movie has everything.
This is a good era of movies. We should make a...
Oh, director. Directed by Dominic Setta, the guy who did Swordfish, a movie that past guest
Patrick Willems
told us to watch and that I watched and is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
I will probably never watch.
Truly a train wreck in slow motion.
I'm terrible at taking guest recommendations. They're like, oh my God, this film is so good. And I'm like, I totally believe you. And then I never watch it. But Jordan is great.
I followed through.
At it. Yeah. Jordan
and it was the worst thing I'd seen.
So we're going to watch California with
yes.
a K.
Okay. If it's the worst thing you've ever seen, don't tell me.
I won't.
I will never acknowledge
it. I loved it so much. And then I'm like DMing Brooke, I actually didn't love it so much.
No.
I will never acknowledge it.
Good.
Honesty only on the pod.
Oof. Anyways, plot, should we?
No.
I mean,
it's
what?
It's too late.
Can I talk about, when we were talking about the scene, my favorite line delivery of the movie is, my father is head of the CIA. Oh, delivers the goods.
Yeah.
And she believes it.
Oh, she put her body into that lie.
I think maybe the funniest moment in this film is that, like, Susanna's first introduction to the mental institution is Clea DuVall being like,
yes.
Oh, I'm a pathological liar. After she's introduced every girl in the entire...
Well, first of all, like, that whole scene is so funny because it's like, dark, it's quiet, they're both lying on their pillows, they're having like what is shot to look like essentially intimate pillow talk, which yeah. like we don't even need to get into the shared space as intimacy themes in this movie.
It's so true. Well, though.
I mean, oh, baby. Yeah, it leads yeah. to the queerness, yeah. yeah.
Exactly. But they're like, you know, it's soft blue light, they're lying on their pillows, and she's telling her the story about Polly and her face, and it's so sad. And Susanna's like, so why are you in here? And Georgina's like, oh, I'm a pathological liar.
Surprise!
Yeah, like, smash cut to the next scene. It is incredible.
It's really good.
It's really funny. Yeah. And, I mean, I love that scene. Yes, it's pretty corny, but that scene at the end when they're watching Wizard of Oz and Clea DuVall turns around
and she gets yeah. so emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
It's so
girl,
sweet.
Retweet.
Yeah, I know. I also love her little diatribe about the Oz books. Yes. Relatable content. I read all those books. I can tell you all the specifics about all the different ones. When she's like, Dorothy isn't actually a big part of these. I was like, correct.
You're like, go. No,
this is true.
She
can't let's
go pop she off. Was,
I could. It like it really gives the vibe that Clea DuVall like read all of the books
yep.
beforehand. Like she believed that. She was like,
method
no,
acting.
I need to have.
She really did.
She's like, this needs to be represented. We need to clear up the truth about Dorothy.
Hey.
We need to talk about Dorothy. Can we also say just like things that I wrote down that
you
we love just
it.
From Letterboxd that people mentioned that
off.
I now can't get out of my head. Lisa's lips needing chapstick. It is, her lips are so gross.
But you can't take your
movie.
Eyes off them.
Awful. And then like the color.
Yeah.
They just look so
just,
like
she's pretty washed
and,
out.
Like, yeah.
this movie.
It's just really
it's not
gross.
Great.
No, absolutely disgusting. But I think like the two things, like if we're talking about like how this movie like hit emotionally, I think where she was talking about like the how do you feel right now when she's like, I don't know what I'm feeling. Is like so potent. I feel like for the pandemic and everything, where it's just like we're like so beaten down by everything. Like watching it, I was like, honestly, like I feel you. Where it's like there's so much inundating us. Where I feel like I felt like that was like the emotional through line for me with her. Mm. Where it's just like she just like I think is so constantly overwhelmed by everything that she's just like I can't. I don't know. I don't feel anything anymore.
I think that one of the reasons that this film resonated very in a very universal way with the teens, the girlies, is that it's like not, it is universal in a particular way. I think like especially Susanna's diagnosis, even though she's technically diagnosed with BPD, which seems incorrect.
Well, they like
well, it seems, I don't know. Well, again, it's like the sort of
like the conversation around everything with her, it feels
it's very
so
interesting.
Well, yeah,
skewed.
I think like
but,
the nebulousness of illness, you know what I mean, and like the spectrum of it is what really makes it resonate so much because like Susanna is this girl who just she has no fucking idea what's going on with her. And so sure, she does get like a formal diagnosis, but that's not the end of it. Yeah. She still has all of these moving parts to figure out that doesn't really solve anything. Having the diagnosis doesn't fix her life.
No.
But it, you know what I mean? And all of them, because I mean, I know Lisa has a diagnosis, but I don't think we really get anything for Polly other than the fact that she like
has
set herself
burns.
On fire.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's so much represented in terms of not only what mental illness is and the spectrum that it exists on, but also what mental illness was thought of as the 60s in the
60s.
Yes.
And
well, it's really, it's illuminating in that way. I think that they did a really good job of being like, okay, well, this is not necessarily how we think now, but this is what this would have looked like in 1967.
Yeah. Right. The promiscuity angle is really interesting where they're like, you like having casual sex, that's a sign that like you are mentally ill.
Unwell,
and she
yeah.
just,
right.
she just is like, well, what kind what of sex men? Isn't casual? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then is also like, well, how many, you know, how many girls would a guy have to sleep with for you to give him the same diagnosis? Yeah. And it's like, there's, I don't know. I think that I was sort of pleasantly surprised with how this film frames like the relationship that Susanna has with her professor, her like whoever that older guy is at the beginning, and like sort of the power dynamics inherent there. Like it never feels like, oh my god, this girl like seduced this older man and like she has so many problems. Like that scene at the ice cream parlor, which I love,
great,
is so good, where Lisa is like, no, like this is not her fault.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
You need to understand, like, how fucked up this is. That, like, he was pursuing her for a romantic exactly. relationship. Yes. Yeah. So that's nice. You know, it's like, I think that there's a lot of, this movie definitely isn't perfect, but there's like a lot of elements that could just be like pieces to like the, oh my God, it's like edgy pie. And instead there's like additional material that sort of like deepens them in a more modern context. Like
being 100%
promiscuous, having casual sex has nothing to do with anything
at all. Yeah. And even with like that angle, and you know, they hammer home so much that like, oh, Susanna's promiscuous, but you really don't see a lot of like Susanna initiating sexual or like romantic contact with people. You see the professor coming to her bedroom, like, you know, you see Toby like coming up to her, the guy at the party, blah blah blah. The only people I think that we see Susanna initiate with are the orderly and Lisa.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like you've painted this girl out to be promiscuous and like made this the linchpin to her mental illness, and really she's just chilling.
She's just chilling.
She's just hanging out. She's sad.
And she's looking but for she's human chilling. Connection. Right. Like, the orderly has this whole thing where he's like, well, once we're out of here, like, I want to go take you to a movie. And it's like, okay, like, you see how this is a problem for both of us. Like,
like
her jumping him in a dark hallway. Like, he's like, I want to go out with you once you're better, of course. Well. Excuse me.
Yeah, once you're, you know, once you're not crazy anymore.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
It's good. I like
there was
it.
a read I was reading about like this being like her being torn between like women in the hospital. You could code that as like the queer world
and then
the outside
externally.
World being like the straight world, and being torn sort of between those two worlds, which I think is a fascinating read of it. And like, obviously it lands with her like going back out into like the straight world, quote unquote. Like, I guess like a changed woman, like if you want to look at this as like Lisa be like a sexual awakening for her of sorts,
and like homosexuality being read as like a mental illness,
right?
Like,
exactly. Yes, which was like
a valid read, you know what I mean? But I also think that like perception is as important as like intention,
right?
And I feel like what has been largely gleaned from this is like so many people have experienced this as like a sexual awakening, and like really, you know, identified with Susanna in like that maybe their depression was, you know, repression of their sexuality or like trying to figure it out. And so I really think that, again, that is a valid read, but also the overwhelming experience is that like, that's not what happened. you know what I mean? And that like people have experienced this as it's not a queer film in the sense of like a studio film that was intentionally made to, you know, whatever.
For the gays. But, yes.
Exactly. But it is for the gays and for the girls.
It is for the gays and for the girls.
Well,
and
if you want to talk about
Yeah.
But like you were just saying, like the declassification, like homosexuality was tied to mental illness till like 1973.
Yeah.
So like, literally, if we, so like, in this time,
in this film, like homosexuality.
In the context of this movie.
Right. And you have Jillian Armentrout, don't know her last name, but we're diagnosed.
Oh, it's Cynthia. Yeah.
Yeah. Like diagnosed as lesbian.
Yeah.
But like denies it. But like that's her diagnosis. So, like, LOL.
And she's just like, you can, I think that, again, it's like she is the most quote unquote normal one, where it's like she really is truly just chilling.
Yeah.
She's just along for the
just
ride.
Hanging out.
Yeah. And I think that like this sort of, I really liked what you said, Mimi, about like a lot of people realizing that like their mental illness could be linked to repression and other like negative aspects of something like coming out, and how this is a film about like your sex, just because your sexual awakening was one specific person doesn't mean that you then owe them something. And like, because they, Lisa and Susanna, have like a very toxic and destructive relationship, not because it's a sapphic one, just because it's like
it just happens to be,
it just
is toxic. Yes.
And so like, I, a lot of kudos to this film for having Susanna break up with her without feeling like she's necessarily leaving the whole like sapphic aspect of her life behind. Like, I like that we don't see her reconnect with a man in the outside world, or that like,
because that's the other thing, that like her romantic and sexual relationships are not the point of the movie.
Is
this
not
relationship a huge part of the movie? Absolutely. But it's not the core, it's not the crux of the movie.
No.
And so I think even back to what you said earlier, Jordan, I did, when I was like researching, doing my Googles, there were a couple of things that were, you know, questioning like, is this queer baiting? And is this, you know, was it kind of a tease? And you know, not that it's my place to say, but I do feel like there has to be room for like a relationship that isn't clearly defined, yes, but can still be romantic, can still be queer, can still be, because we have those nebulous things in straight media too, you know what I mean? Sometimes, yes, there is a relationship that doesn't take a full shape. Sometimes there is a relationship that, you know, isn't fully thought out, and we don't see the end of it or the beginning of it or the full arc of it, because that's how things happen in real life.
Yes, right. It's confusing. Sometimes
it's just, it's nebulous and it's weird and it's confusing and it's gross and it's toxic and like it's all of these things, and there has to be room for all of that to be seen on screen.
Yes,
I completely agree. Yeah. And I think that the culturally this movie was made out to be more titillating than it actually is. Like we said, it's not this like, right, super steamed up like sapphic, no, romance this with horny, damaged women
thriller. Yeah.
It's really, exactly, not at all. Like a lot of it is coming from the very nuanced and like high quality performances. Yes. And so I think that like sometimes people make queer, and I am fine with saying this because it's true, people make queer baiting out to be way worse than it actually is a lot of the time, just because you had two people, like there's a specific way in which, you know, the studios or the creators will intentionally queer bait people, and there's sometimes, mm-hmm, shit just happens. Like, yeah, I remember people were like, Killing Eve is queer baiting because they haven't ended up together yet, and I was like, not even a little bit. Not even a little bit.
That's the thing. I'm like, where's the bait? Like, yeah, what's the bait? And what was the...
You're fishing, but you have nothing on your lure.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Come on.
I'm
going to
give you that one. I'm going to give you that one. But actually, no, that's...
It was quick. Yeah. It was quick. I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, what's the bait and what did they get from it? It's not like... Yeah. Again, I was 6 when this came out, but from my memory, yeah, but there, I have no memory of this ever being marketed or sold to me as like, it's about a queer love story. No, it was about like crazy women. Yes. It was about Susanna Kaysen losing her fucking mind. Like that was always the sell. It was never in the vein of like, you know, wild things, cruel intentions. It was like the, right, Prozac mission.
Yes.
You know what,
yes,
I mean? It was like that, the Liz Phair, like, women are crazy.
Yeah. Yes. Like, yes. I think that for a lot of people, this was like a balm for sort of like that alt version, like particularly, yeah, like 90s grunge. I mean, even Winona, mm-hmm, is styled like so 90s grunge in this with the hair, so, and the outfits. Oh, like
it's the striped shirts, yes, her never ending supply of striped shirts.
Yeah. With outfits, right, it's like, yeah, very androgynous, though. Yeah. I think they're playing with gender, mm-hmm, for Winona a little bit. Like she has
for
a
both
very...
of them, I would even say.
Yeah, yeah,
like it's for very... Angie too.
Yeah, it's, mm-hmm, like gender fluid. You're like, they're like kind of playing that androgynous line.
I really
like
think
we love
are,
and
yeah,
like it plays into the queerness between the two of them for sure.
For sure.
It's all good. And I'm really glad that we all like it. It's, yeah, it's a good movie.
Good movie.
If it's
you,
good.
If
it's
you
good
dislike
stuff.
It, give it a second chance and just don't take it too much to heart. Just,
yeah,
enjoy,
I think
the
just
watch.
Like, don't take it too seriously.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
like don't go because and do it. Like this is like the most important piece of art. Or
this
whatever.
Is not an
it's
after
like
school
a,
special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think what's really important is like Brooke said earlier, it is Susanna's 18. Yes. She graduates high school and is subsequently hospitalized. Like, this, yes, is a teen movie.
Yeah.
This is about teenagers.
Yes.
Yeah. That's actually a really good segue.
Before.
Oh,
I have,
yes,
one scene I want to talk about.
You talk about it.
I just think that the suicide scene is really affecting. I think it was handled with such grace and care in this movie, especially. Mm. Like obviously, like, the way that they set it up and stuff like that. But, like, the suspense of the reveal and the aftermath of the reveal felt so well executed and not gratuitous in a way that I think like a lot of modern and or movies at the time.
You can call it out. You can call it out.
Like 13 Reasons Why.
Say it.
I knew you were dying to.
I knew. I could like taste it.
That,
it
just,
like, oh, say it.
It just really, really upset me. But like it was done in such a way that like felt respectful and like also while forwarding the plot in a way that's like actually important. And like I feel like often nowadays like would dialogues and discussions people like either hyper analyze or like will try to do something like this but like overthink it and mess up or underthink it and then it comes, mm-hmm, across as problematic, but this movie does it in just like enough, it gives you enough details without,
it's
like
so gentle,
exactly, yeah, gentle is what
and
we
the funny
were talking
thing is,
about
even,
yeah,
like when they, because honestly I didn't remember that they do show you like when Lisa's taking the money out, like you do see her,
yeah,
but it never feels, like you said, gratuitous. It never feels like this is something that's meant to upset you.
Right.
But in the same vein, you do get this this tenderness, this gentleness of like seeing that Daisy has made up a routine and like all this stuff. But then the full reveal of the body is like, you see Lisa being this kind of grating and callous. You know what I mean? There's kind of a,
it
like
plays
a
into because that's the switch for her too, where like Susanna starts to like tear apart from Lisa and is like, maybe this isn't
and
healthy.
See her for what she
So it actually has a use to it where you're like, you are taking money out of the pocket of a dead person.
Dead person. Yeah.
Like you have zero regard for humanity or like this person as, you know, like what they were.
Yeah.
But then like she takes like, to not like save the cat, but then literally Winona like saves the cat.
Saves the cat.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Lisa calls out so much earlier in the film that she's like, "Oh yeah, I'm a sociopath. Like that's why I'm here.
Right.
Like just I'm fine with it." And like she remains fine with it. And so it's like when Susanna is so like horrified that like her sociopathic tendencies are coming into effect, like I like that it gives Lisa that continued agency to be like, girl, I told you, like I don't know what you want me to say here. Like I think that it's good.
it's good.
Yeah. And you know, to your point, Jordan, about sort of like how these kinds of scenes are handled, I think that like it's always going to be something where like the conversation is like continuously evolving, and something that was like acceptable 25 years ago is not going to be acceptable now. And it's like it's just one of those things where it's like you want to watch the movie within the context of the time.
Right.
No one is ever going to have like, I feel like, an across the board like normal opinion about it, and it's okay. Like movies deal with a lot of sensitive subjects. There's bound to be that. But
this movie's like a sensitive subject bucket.
Yeah.
Literally, like this, it is the sensitive subject. Like,
yeah. So I think that like it's there's definitely like an evolution that's always going to be happening, and sometimes that evolution happens to happen backwards, a la 13 Reasons Why. Anyway, so that's that. But I'm very glad that they got blowback on that season, because I was truly
so happy. Yes.
Truly such a mess.
Yeah, it's
a mess.
Exactly. Just
no.
I read that book when I was probably 13 or 14.
Wow, really?
And my parents took it away from me after I read it. They were like, you can't read this anymore. I think it was because I was in my like peak sort of like, oh my God, angst. And I was like, I totally get it. Like, I understand her. My parents were like, nope, I'm just gonna.
Girl, yeah.
My parents
should have. I never
honestly,
read it.
Honestly, as they should have, because I was just being very dramatic. Like, there was nothing to be worried about. So anyway, yeah.
I've not read it either.
With a
so.
Wild book. Have you, have you read it?
I've never read it.
Yeah.
No,
I don't. It's not good.
It might have been. It might have been like a summer reading thing in, I don't remember what year it came out, but I want to say maybe, I don't know.
I think
I don't
it was
know. I just 20... never read it.
10
yeah, and I
maybe
I graduated in 2010, so I think I was like, I just missed it.
Nope.
Yeah.
But also like the summer reading at my again, not a mental institution but very close high school, was like, I remember one year we did a like a Chuck Palahniuk double feature for summer reading.
Wow.
So like not normal, not a normal place.
That's impressive though that
I
those
wanna,
are your
yeah,
first
no.
show.
Well, because they would let on. They would let like different teachers instead of there being one
cool
list for everybody, like teachers could pick pairings of books.
That's
and I
fun.
Think the metal shop teacher picked like Fight Club and
Let's
Catcher
go.
In the Rye.
Fucking good for him.
I mean, he really
Taste.
Went for it. It was
I love
something
that.
Else.
I love that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's my toxic trait, is that I love Catcher in the Rye.
Please.
That and Night and Day. Just really two for two
yeah.
this episode.
Killing it.
I feel like I need to give Catcher
in the Rye.
Famously cut from the same cloth, by the way.
Oh,
Night
naturally.
And Day, Catcher in the Rye.
Absolutely.
Sure.
I think
need
to give Catcher in the Rye another go around, because I remember absolutely hating it when I was in high school. But I've grown a lot as a person. I would like to reevaluate.
I mean,
it.
Like, it's obviously like. Dude, there's so much we could talk about with
no,
that, but we don't. I'm like, we don't need to get in. But I just think it's like, I just think it's like a good book. You
I'd
know what I mean?
Read
where
it
I'm just like,
again.
Well written. J.D. Salinger knows how to write a book.
I like literally, I cannot give you my 14-year-old opinions on it with any sort of. I'm not comfortable.
There's so
saying
many
that
books.
On mic. Look, I'm a different
things
person.
I was reading at 14. We do not need to discuss.
Absolutely not.
Way.
My takes from when I was 14 don't Ooh. Need to be rehashed.
I will say my greatest take I ever had on like a young person literature
so
is reading
worried.
Atonement and being like, this is one of the greatest things I have ever read, and having not seen the movie yet. And it was also a sexual awakening for a book where I was like reading it, and I'm like reading like the fucking scene in the library, and I'm like, what is I'm like, is oh my hot. God, this is so sexy.
I'm surprised I let you read
is
that.
Is this allowed? Well, this is hot.
My parents or my mom bought it for me, and on the cover it looks like a war book, and I was just like, it was like a popular bestseller, and I'm like, this looks like a great book. I had no fucking idea what the hell was the content.
Spoiler alert.
It's hot. So I'm reading, I'm like, oh my God, this is so horny.
Y'all are so lucky.
I'm like 12. I'm like,
so lucky. My sexual book awakening was fan fiction. I can't even lie to you.
Please. No, we have to like get into it. What was the property? What was the IP?
I brought up CW Supernatural star Misha Collins unprovoked.
Oh no.
I think we can all guess. Like I said, no. I'm a different person. All right. It was a long time ago.
Oh,
it
was this. A long time How much ago. Money did this make? I'll bail you out.
Okay, thank you so much. As we mentioned, this film had a little bit of a fraught release. Yes. It performed relatively well, but it was not critically acclaimed. It wasn't critically panned. It was just
I
think
it was a Christmas release too, right?
Weird Christmas release. You could maybe say the feel bad movie of Christmas.
Oh, baby.
Maybe.
Wait, is this a Christmas movie?
Is Girl Interrupted
a Christmas Western?
Let's go.
It's a fucking Christmas Western.
We've discovered genres that have never been put together before.
Absolutely not. We created a genre.
And yet.
But honestly, it did pretty well. Expanded in early January to a really hot 1900 theaters. Collected.
That's great. That's like, I'm shocked. Theaters.
I know. Ooh. This was, it's pretty star-studded.
Oh, I mean, that's why. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you got all the goods.
I mean, I guess I'm shocked because this wouldn't get a wide release now. So it's like so nice to see a movie like this where you're like, oh, right. Like an adult like film in a theater to a wide release. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. It does have that sort of like, this is like the Cider House rules year. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's 1999. It's like,
it's the year.
Especially for like that kind of mid-budget
like, yes.
Not quite indie, but like indie vibe. Like this is a good year for that.
God, it's such a good year.
$15 to $30 million budgets. Yeah. This film cost $24 million and it made twice its production budget. There we go. Like it's like rinse and repeat.
So not a flop.
Not a flop.
She didn't flop. People would lead you to believe.
Yeah, like
she was not in her flop era.
Perfectly respectable.
Girl, not flopping.
Because it was like this was when a movie could make like twice its budget back, and you're like, cool, we're good.
Yeah. We're cool. Now it has to be like, this budget was $1 and the movie made $17 billion fucking dollars, or it's a flop.
Or it's like, we just have to pour everything that we have into like the one $150 million movie of the year. And then if it doesn't perform, like you're fucked.
Right.
Makes no sense to me.
The business model doesn't make sense.
At all.
Yes. But I do think it has been reclaimed by the girls and the gays, like we said, peak Tumblr era. I should know, I was there. And
all the Tumblr girls have migrated to Letterboxd.
I was gonna say, do you want to see how much they migrated?
Ooh, baby.
All right.
Okay.
What's your guess?
I'm gonna go 3-4.
Okay.
I think a good film, but I don't think a lot of people are giving it like fives or things like that. So I can see it sort of having like the 3, 3.5, and 4 as like a little thing.
Very nice. I'm okay. Keeping a
I'm
poker
gonna
face.
Say no, I'm nervous. Don't do the poker face. Let me think. So high ratings from the girls and the gays for sure, but a lot of really low ratings from like just haters, just holleration and hateration in the dance race. So I'm gonna say I'm gonna say like 3.8.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
I have news for both of you. It's a 3.9.
Wait.
Hey!
Really?
That's
high.
Shocking.
Yeah. And you know, this thing has like 17,000 reviews.
It's one of our more popular
271,000 people have seen it. A lot of people are giving this 5 stars.
Wow.
And 4 stars.
Those girls aren't interrupted
one bit.
Yeah.
Please. Good for us. Good for the girls and the gays. Good for us.
I was very so. I feel like I went on the same journey as you went on, Mimi, when I was like researching this movie, because I was like, people like this movie. This is like,
yeah, I was like, oh, this is a classic. Like the performances, people love this movie. Yeah. And Google was like,
No. You got it wrong. It has a rotten score on Rotten Tomatoes, and like on Metacritic it has like a very like low score, but like it's been reclaimed.
I think it's like the people who were watching it at the time are probably either A, dead, or B, older. And so now it has this like reclamation where like the younger people who it
with
more resonated
the audience
with
that it was for.
Exactly. Yeah, are like, oh, that, I actually enjoy this film.
I think it was positioned to be like very serious and very prestige-y. And it's a bit of a melodrama, but I don't see that like as a problem. Right, right. Like
at all.
Yeah.
Mangold's thing, I think, is like that, as we're saying, like everything he does can be sort of pinned as prestige-y, except maybe Night and Day, but like Walk the Line, this, you know, like
Ford,
he knows how to
Logan.
Like do his like Ford versus Ferraris, baby, you
yeah
know?
Yeah, he just has like that prestige-y angle to him in a good way where
yes,
like
it's
we said,
not it's not annoying, it's
he feels
nice.
Just like
yes.
No,
solid,
like,
dude making a solid movie.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah, we have to stand.
I love it. But is he a solid dude making
a
queer
movie?
Let's find out. Okay.
Where is it landing on the queer quadrant for you, Brooke?
Okay, on the queer quadrant, 1 out of 5 stars here. Let's see. I don't know. I'm a little conflicted. I think I'm gonna... I don't know if I have like a lot to back this up. I think I'm just going to go with my
gut. With your
gut.
Yeah.
Give it a nice 3.5 stars.
Okay.
Pretty good. Ooh. Pretty good. There we go. How about you, Jordan?
Wow. Okay. I was thinking between a 3 and a 3.5 as well.
Oh, look at
I
that.
I think that we talked about, like, you know, there's obviously like a lot of the sapphic undertones. There's the gigantic kiss that is one of the most important cinematic kisses of all
long.
It is the sexiest thing you'll
it
ever
is
see
gritty,
in your life.
It's nasty.
You see
it's tongue X-rated.
Spit everywhere.
Oh, the trail spit.
Oh my god, when they're fucking, it's crazy.
Oh my god.
No.
Jesus.
But I mean, I think like, as we were saying, like there is like very much like queer tones to this movie without necessarily being like, it's a gay movie, which I think is important. I'm going to go with a
ooh, he's conflicted. He's thinking. The wheels are turning.
I'll go like 3.5.
I think
3.5 feels right, where it's like there. You can definitely see it. It's like,
I think that's very appropriate.
That feels appropriate.
Fair,
yeah.
Okay. Mimi, how
it's
are you
it's not like
feeling?
A landmark ooh gay movie, but it's like, yeah, it's there. Sorry.
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
No, I feel like... just, you know, just to be different, I'm going to say 3.6.
Ooh, a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, a little bit of, you know, maybe a 3.62 if you want to be very specific.
Ooh.
I'll write
but
that down.
But I agree. Like, I think the shape of it is there. And again, like I said earlier, the impact of it and the perception of it is just as important as what was intended.
Right.
And what we see is that Angelina and Winona brought very intentional, you know, weight to the relationship. And the impact that it had as a queer movie, I think, you know, knocks it up there on the QQ scale.
I love it. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Very solid showing across the
absolutely
board.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
good
we love
performance
it
for it.
Yeah. Happy to see it. Mimi, thank you so much for
a
being
delight
here.
Thank you for having me.
Oh my god.
Of course.
Literally our pleasure. You're so great. If people want to check out more of your stuff, which obviously they should, where can they find you?
They can find me at Very Mimi on Twitter, where I am talking about the Schumacher Batman movies constantly.
Yes.
Fucking constantly.
Ooh,
all
great
the time.
Movies. Great movies.
And at Mimi Stringfield on Instagram, where I am just posting with funny filters.
Sounds great. Sounds like a great time.
Love to see it. Yeah, I'm having a good time.
I love it. And we are also on the internet, not as exciting, but we are on Twitter. I'm at Brooke B. Solomon.
Jordan H. Gus.
And we're together at Queer Quadrant. And you can find this podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you'd like to get your podcast. Drop us.
That's right.
All right. Drop us a review. Drop us a subscribe.
Look at all those commas.
We would love to hear from you. Yeah, lots of commas.
We love commas.
We haven't done a comma movie since Love, comma, Simon.
I know.
So.
Love, comma, Simon gets girl, comma, interrupted.
Oh.
Gay, comma, interrupted.
Ooh.
Just a little bit. You can
Lisa would kill him on sight.
Oh yeah.
Simon walks up. He's like, "Hi, my name's Simon." Lisa just looks at him. He's like, "Oh, nope."
Immediately.
Never mind.
Well, you can bash us for all of our terrible puns or our terrible mashups.
What do you mean?
On Twitter, and you can also tweet at us and tell us, I don't know, how you feel about this movie and what you might like to see us cover in the future.
What are we covering in the future?
Next week, speaking of Schumacher, we are covering Batman Forever.
Shut the fuck up.
That is right.
I was like, lay up.
We got it.
No, mm-hmm. Hold on. Yes. Because when I got the DM and I was like, you know, whatever, and I told one of my group chats and they were like, are they going to let you talk about the Schumacher Batman movies? Because I really think that they should let you talk about the Schumacher Batman movies. I was like, I fucking agree.
Do you want to pop off right now? Go for it.
You want to give us a little
preview?
If
you give like a quick a taste.
Hold on. The Schumacher Batman movies are the best Batman movies.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm committed to that. The best Batman
They're
movies.
They're so good.
They feel the most like a comic book.
Yes!
They feel the most like the 60s series. Mm-hmm. They are campy. They're colorful. The bat suit has nipples.
Yes, the most important part.
Oh, the color in the Schumacher Batman movies. The color. It's the so color. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
That blacklight fight scene.
Oh.
It's everything.
Like my heart rate just. Brooke, I'm not kidding. I love these movies.
They're so good.
Can I do a spoiler? Quick spoiler. Brooke's Letterboxd review for Batman Forever is one of my favorite things you've ever reviewed. Where Brooke goes, "There's not a single not a single straight person in Gotham."
It's true.
It's so
anywhere,
true.
Anywhere. They're so good. They're so gay. They're so campy.
So yeah. They make me so happy.
I'm crying. Yeah. I have a tear in my eye. So much. Rest in peace, Joel Schumacher.
Truly. A king.
Gay
king.
A legend. Campy king. He made The Lost Boys. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Which we've talked about it on Main Feed. Good film.
Good movie.
Incredible film.
Good, movie.
Yes. So tune in next week for Batman Forever, and maybe you'll get some bonus Mimi content out of it anyway.
Oh, God.
We'd love to see it.
We will carry your thoughts with us.
Thank you.
So, yeah, that's going to be a good time.
And, Brooke, do you have anything you would like to leave our listeners with? Other than the fact that this is secretly a Western.
It is secretly a Western. And I think we proved it.
Do, 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 do. Nice.